Welcome to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Richard's going to take the next few minutes to share some great words of hope, insight, humor, and relevance. In today's lost and searching world, that's something everyone desperately needs to hear. Speaking of that, we'd love to keep this conversation going with you anytime through our website, richardellistalks.com. In fact, there's so many ways to connect with us from there that you really need to check it out for yourself, richardellistalks.com. But right now, let's go ahead and get things off and running with today's talk. Here's Richard Ellis.
All right, the title today is Location, Location, Location. Now, if you've been around any amount of time or not at all, location, location, location is usually something you see in reference to real estate. The three most important things about real estate are location, location, location. And you'll hear that quite a bit. Whether it's a 7-Eleven, 7-Elevens are usually in a pretty good location. Starbucks, usually a decent location. Even gas stations, if you're ever paying attention to where gas station placement is, you'll have one on one corner, one on another, and all of a sudden one makes it, one doesn't. They just shut the other one down, dig the tanks up, and it's over. The location was so important that it had to be literally on the right corner to catch people coming and going, or it wouldn't survive. Conan O'Brien, in one of his bits, said, Republicans have called for a national African-American museum. The plan is being held up by finding a location that isn't in their neighborhood. So sometimes location can be very important on that. I found an article at TrumpUniversity.com, Donald Trump's Trump University. And the article says, location, location, location is one of the most overused and misunderstood phrases in the real estate business. Sure, when it comes to real estate, a property in a great location can seem like a no-brainer investment, but where do you fit into your investment decision? What role does the entrepreneurial vision and imagination play in deciding what and where to invest your time, energy, and money? And he goes on a few paragraphs later and says, successful real estate entrepreneurs like Donald Trump are able to read local market signals and make investment decisions based on their appraisal of the future, not the past. In case of the church, we've got to look both ahead and behind, and I'm going to talk to you a little bit different spin today on this location, location, location thing. Turn to Acts chapter 7, if you would, in the New Testament. There's a guy named Stephen. He was chosen to basically help serve tables because they needed some help. The Grecian widows were getting passed up in the serving of food every day when the church was birthed. And Stephen is brought in to answer to the religious leaders and basically preaches a sermon, and at the end of it, he's killed. He says some things that he doesn't make them very happy with. But it's interesting, the one sermon here that we've got from him, he starts out from the very beginning of the faith with Abraham. And in Acts chapter 7, verse 2, he mentions Abraham who was in Mesopotamia. And then he jumps, if you go on down to verse 9, he brings in the patriarchs becoming envious. You know, the brothers of Joseph sold him into slavery. So he covers Joseph and the time in Egypt that God's people spent there. Then he brings in Moses down in verse 17. He talks about Moses. And then down in verse 44, he kind of recounts the history of Israel. In verse 44, he says, our fathers had the tabernacle of witness in the wilderness. And if you go back and read in the Old Testament, God gave them specific instructions on a tent. And this tent basically housed the manifest presence of God, the Ark of the Covenant. There was an elaborate thing. You can read Numbers, how the thing had to be moved and packed up. And there were thousands of volunteers who rotated basically and would pack this thing up. And when God would move his people, this tent had to be packed up, moved. They'd stop at another place. And his presence was in this tent. He didn't live in them. His Holy Spirit would come on some people occasionally, but basically he lived in a tent. So Stephen here mentions that in verse 44. Our fathers had the tabernacle of witness in the wilderness. And then down in verse 47, he says, but Solomon built him a house. And you go read the story of the temple in Jerusalem being built. It was an ornate, elaborate, gold-covered, fine fabrics. It was just amazing, this temple. And the Shekinah glory of God, the presence of God filled the thing so much that literally the priests had to run for their lives kind of thing to get out of there. It was just too much. So God then inhabited this place, this building. And I think there is some carryover on this location thing for us today. And the challenge, one of the challenges we have as a church is there is this thing about the Old Testament. They had a tabernacle, they had a building, and sometimes we can get, I'm not anti-buildings, but we get so caught up in the building piece of it, and we literally think, well, that's the location. And if we just build a pretty enough house that we can have some little place, you know, behind the altar or whatever it is, and we'll call it the sanctuary, and we'll put God in there, and we'll come visiting maybe every day. Some people go to church every day. And we'll go visit God, and we'll talk to him, and we'll give a little money and do this process. The problem with all of it is you cannot put him in a box anymore. And Stephen, when he goes on here, look at verse 48, right after he said, but Solomon built him a house, he says to them, however, the Most High does not dwell in temples made with hands. And when Jesus died on the cross, if you go back and read the story, one of the things that happened when he died was the veil in the temple, in this building, there's this thick curtain, basically, more like a wall that separated inside the deepest part of the temple. There was the holy place and the holy of holies. And that holy of holies was where the presence of God was manifest. And there was a curtain that separated it. And the high priest didn't even go in there, but once a year it was such a prized place. But when Jesus died, the scripture says that that veil was rent, was torn from the top to the bottom, split in two, exposing the Holy of Holies. He's not there anymore. When Jesus died, he put an end to God living in a box, living in a house on the planet. So if there's not a location here, where are you going to find him? Some people think, well, he's in Rome. I'm not belittling anybody's faith. Let me tell you something. I don't care how big a basilica you build, you're not putting our God in a box anymore. And there's not a temple anywhere on the planet, a little room nice enough, clean enough, pure enough to put him. The only little room he's got anymore is you and me. And this is a very difficult thing sometimes for people to get their arms around. And part of the reason being is I don't know that I like the thought of God living in me, because that means wherever I go, he goes. And whatever I do, he does. And whatever I do to myself, I'm doing to him as well. That somehow he has decided to take residence inside of me, then God's location is where? Wherever I am. You can't come in here and punch your clock, say you went to church, you can find you someplace that has a real nice building. You can't visit God. You can only know him or not know him. You can only carry him around or not carry him around. And if you do, everywhere you go, he is stuck going with you. Go over to Acts chapter 17. Paul here, he's in Athens, and he's strolling up and down the streets of Athens, and they got gods of all kind of names. They just put little altars everywhere. And in Acts 17, verse 22, then Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, men of Athens, I perceive that in all things you are very religious. For as I was passing through and considering the objects of your worship, I even found an altar with this inscription, to the unknown God. Therefore, the one whom you worship without knowing, him I proclaim to you. God who made the world and everything in it, since he is Lord of heaven and earth, does not dwell in temples made with hands. And then he goes on and talks about how we worship him and who he really is. He does not dwell in a place made with hands. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 16. And then we'll go to 1 Corinthians 6 as well. Now the context in some of these, and this, you know, people say we always seem to come back to this because it's in the Bible. But here he says, 1 Corinthians 3:16, he says, do you not know that you are the temple of God and that the Spirit of God dwells in you? And then in, just go ahead and turn over to 1 Corinthians 6:19, similar thing he says, or do you not know that your body is the temple of the Holy Spirit who is in you, whom you have from God, and you are not your own? And the context of one of these is sleeping with someone you're not married to. And you say, well, why do you always go back to that? Everybody's doing it. Everybody who's got God living in them shouldn't be doing it. God set up marriage as this holy institution, this thing that ought to be prized and precious and protected by anybody who's in it. And if you are sleeping with someone who is married, it's just as bad as sleeping. If you're not married and somebody else is married, you are taking the temple of God and joining it to somebody else unlawfully. And the reason you feel so bad and the reason why you're trying to get away from God and anybody who will say something like this is you're like, la, 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 put your fingers in your ears. I don't want to hear it anymore. You got to hear it because you're going to wreck your life if you don't. And the problem, the reason we feel so bad is we are doing things with his house, with his temple that he's not pleased with. And if you look in the Old Testament, there were priests that did terrible things in the temple. They'd put graffiti, just wicked, evil graffiti on the walls inside these chambers. And God at some point says, you know what? I'm merciful. I've got grace, but enough is enough. It's not just that you're destroying your life. You are my temple. Now, nobody should have to go to church to see the church. All they got to do is be around you if you claim to be a Christian. A hospital, you can build the most beautiful, amazing, technologically sound, awesome hospital on the planet. If it doesn't have doctors and nurses and people in it, there are no self-serve hospitals that I've ever found. The hospital has value and meaning because there are trained people, equipped people in there so that when a person shows up, there is a person to use all that equipment to help them do something. But if the people aren't there for the people, there's nothing going to happen. You don't go in a hospital and say, well, I found an OR and I'm kind of hurting here and here's a scalpel and oh, I hope I do this right and cut yourself open. You say, well, that's silly, but we think that about churches. People drive by and go, oh, what a beautiful church. That church may be the ugliest thing on the planet if the people aren't being the church. Anybody can raise some money and build a box. Museums do that. There's a police radio, you know, you get guys on the radio, anybody that knows anything about police work, and to abbreviate things, they talk in numbers, right? One of them is, what's your 1014? Anybody know what that is? What's your location? Now, here's what I want to ask you today. What's your 1014? What is your location? Because at any time during the day, if you claim to be a believer, you have a location. And if whatever your location is, you either are there because you have been dispatched to that location or you just got there on your own. The sooner we figure out, the Holy Spirit is kind of like the dispatcher. He lives in us. He is supposed to control our lives. And when he says to me, go here, do this, move there, whatever it is my job to obey, to take that command seriously and go there. Now, I've used an example of the hospital. You got a big old beautiful hospital. Not everybody can get themselves to the hospital. And unfortunately, some churches end up being like big Sam's wholesale clubs. And I go every once in a while. You don't dare go there without your card. You're not getting in without your card. And so, my wife, I'm like, I'm with her. Don't knock me out. I'm with her. We'll park the car, but can I get in too? You know, there's these big boxes and there's stuff in there you need. But if you don't know how to get there and nobody lets you in, you're like, well, it's just too intimidating. I don't belong. I'm not a member of that club. Churches shouldn't be big warehouses. They ought to be retail establishments. They ought to be ambulances. One of the things I love to compare it to, if it is a big hospital, then we ought to be like ambulance drivers. And each of us ought to be equipped. And part of the purpose of a church is to equip the saints to do what? To be mobilized, to be moved out to different locations and do the work of the ministry. Now, where are you? And sometimes what is so hard for people to say, I hate my job. Forget your job. It's your location. You say, but I hate my job. You can't change that, can you? Then stop saying I hate my job and say, God, you know what? I'm not crazy about this job, but I thank you for this job because for some reason you have put me here and left me here. And it may not be about my job. It may not be about the money. It may be about the people here. When this little church started, we moved into an office and I sat just recently at a birthday party. Our offices, when we started the church down on McKinney Avenue, down near the Hard Rock, three doors down was an artist, and the artist's mom showed up in town and was helping him, and mom was going through, and grandma, she's his mother and grandmother, the grandkids, she's having a rough time, so we'd end up outside for years. We end up going through these struggles, sitting there on the bench, and recently, I ended up at a birthday party. Long story, her granddaughter ended up coming to live with her through a difficult time. And at this birthday party for this young girl, I looked up, and as it turned out, the granddaughter, everybody at the birthday party were friends from school, and she had ended up in the school where my girls go out of that relationship, and we have affected and infected their entire life all over an office being in a certain location. You've got to open your eyes. You've got to open your ears wherever you go, whatever you do. Now, if you're in a bad place and God didn't send you there, get out of there. And you say, well, I'm really not supposed to be in this strip club, but I better witness while I'm here, I guess. I'm not talking about that. You get out of there, we'll send some girls back to take over, not where you left off, but to help those people if you're so burdened for them. Sometimes where our location has nothing to do with God getting us there, it's that we make bad decisions. So get in a good place where you can make some wise decisions and realize that God is moving us around. He dispatches us. There are situations I get into and I don't like where I am. I'm not enjoying myself. It's not fun. You know what? It isn't always about fun. And I've shared stories of flat tires and terrible things that happen. You know what? Your flat tire could be about somebody who needs God's help, and the only way to get you there was a flat tire. And if we're not paying attention to those things, we're grumbling, we're complaining, we're worrying, we're upset, then we miss every opportunity to say what it is we're supposed to say and be who it is that we're supposed to be out there. Now, if you go back into the scriptures, and what I encourage you to do is you read the Bible. If you follow Jesus around the Bible, where was Jesus? He didn't park himself at the temple. As far as we know, he never even went in the Holy of Holies, and he's God himself. They wouldn't let him get that close. Jesus was at the temple teaching. Jesus was at sinners' houses having dinner. And everybody got, oh, he eats and, you know, runs around with all these terrible people. When's the last time you got caught with some really bad people for a really good reason? You say, well, it's dangerous for me to run around with my old friends. Well, then get you about 12 friends to go with you and go back. We cannot have a to hell with everybody we know attitude and say, well, you know what, I got saved. I'm going to go down to the box that we built and put God in and us in. We're going to huddle up in our little fort till Jesus comes back. You can't find that anywhere. We gather. We have little family reunions every week. Encourage one another, challenge one another. Are you okay? Have little Bible studies, call each other every day. But God has left us here to mobilize us and impact people's lives and speak truth into their life in a loving way. You know what? Some people can't get to church. The church has to get to them. And sometimes we find ourselves out there rescuing people who have gotten embroiled and caught in the briars of life out there, so to speak, and they can't get loose on their own, and they don't need you to come out there whacking them over the head with some Bible, judging them. They need you to come out there gently, getting the speck out of their eye because you've removed the beam in your own. I meet every Friday at the same restaurant with an accountability partner. And after a few months of doing this, the manager, one day I walked in, stepped up to the counter, and I'd kind of spoken to him before and told him he needed to clean his thing up, something that he had wrong in the restaurant. Anyhow, trying to be helpful, you know, you got something that needs to be fixed. And so we kind of laughed about that. So I step up to the counter the other day, and I order my meal, and I go to pay for it, and the person on the other side says, no charge, Mohammed paid for it. Turns out Mohammed is the manager of this restaurant, and he's seen me and my buddy in there every week, just like clockwork. We're good customers, so he said, I'll cover your meal one day. I waved at him. That was it. So the other day, we're sitting there having lunch, and we had just picked this place because it was convenient for us to meet halfway, kind of, between where his office is and mine is. So we're sitting there, and the guy comes by, and we speak, say hello, and then he stops, and he says, so you guys meet here every week? I said, absolutely. And he said, so what do y'all do? You know, you just don't want to ask me that because anyhow, I said, you know, I'm figuring, well, his name is Mohammed. He's probably not Presbyterian, so I got to come up with a good, you know, a good answer for this. So I said, well, we're kind of both in, we work in spiritual things. So there we go. We're spiritual. That's what we are. So I'm kind of being careful not to drop the preacher bomb on him. So we ended up saying, well, we both kind of involved in church stuff and we meet here every week. He says, yeah, I really, really, so we're talking like that. And he says, well, there's another couple of guys that come in here on another day. And I said, really? He says, yeah, they're involved in some kind of workplace thing. I said, yeah, one of them's name is Dan. Of course, I didn't know anything about this. He says, yeah, one of them's name is Dan. Two other guys show up there every week like clockwork. And he's watching all this happen. So then I said to him, I said, well, remind me again, where are you from? He says, well, I'm from Morocco. And of course, my way my brain works, I said, would you by any chance know, you know, like the New York question, oh, New York, do you know Bob? You know, sure I know Bob. So I look at the guy and I say, well, do you by any chance know a girl named Sophia from Morocco? And he got this look on his face. And I said, well, the reason I know Sophia is that when my mom died, my dad's 50th wedding anniversary came up, and a girl named Sophia, who works at the hotel that we call to try to get some rooms and have dinner, celebrating my dad's 50th wedding anniversary with my whole family without my mom, she helped me. And he looked back at me and said, she's my wife. And of course, my heart almost stops. I'm like, what are the odds of me knowing this man's wife? So I began to tell him the story. And he said, yes, and you had dinner in a certain restaurant in the hotel. I said, yes. He says, I remember her telling me about you. Now let me tell you something. My God is a God of location and times and places and appointments, eternal intersections. And you are not where you are by chance. Even if you think you are, you say, well, no, I tried to find a quiet place to meet someone. There is no such thing. People are watching you. People know what you're doing, observing that. And God may have mobilized you for another reason, and you thought that was the reason, but you get there, and he says, you know what? Here's part of that reason. Thanks for obeying. In my own life, I needed some accountability. So that's what got me there, my obeying God to get in the restaurant in the first place. And then God said, now watch this. And here your mama dying, and now Mohammed and Sophia are husband and wife, and I'm going to give you a chance to live this out and talk to this guy and maybe have an impact. Now, does that mean they'll become Christians? I don't know, but I'm going to tell you what, it got my attention. Now, you go through your day in your life, and something terrible happens. I got another one. I'm not proud to admit this. I had the whole staff in the car. We're zipping somewhere after lunch, and I come over a hill. I come over. I was going just a little bit too fast, and a cop jumps out from behind a post. You know, they should never, that ought to be illegal, but anyhow, But you know what? I had it coming. I'm not going the speed limit all the time, so I just went, okay. We had a nice laugh, and he had a nice laugh at my expense, as I recall. And so I got a ticket. So I can either shove the ticket, and of course I didn't do that then because everybody's in the car and I'm being godly, but later, later I can shove it in the dash and say, you know, blah, 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 get all upset or say, you know what, God, I was speeding. I deserve it. Thank you. Now, what's this about? You've allowed this to happen. Now, don't let me spoil the rest of it. Was getting a ticket good? No, but bring some good from this, God. Enough bad stuff, enough bad stuff. So now what do I do from now on? I go to my court date. You know, I've done this before. And I went in there one day and stood before the judge and I said, Your Highness, and it was Your Honor. And I just got all confused. Don't call them Your Highness. They don't like that. But somewhere in all these proceedings, my whole life has been redirected over a stupid ticket. But God may use that, and if I keep my eyes and ears open, he'll say, okay, this is the reason. I let you get a ticket. You messed up, but I'm going to bring good from it. Stop complaining. Stop worrying. Stop griping. Stop murmuring. You can't pay your light bill, so you end up the last minute going down to the place to ticket. Don't go in there all embarrassed or whatever. Say, okay, God, I would never have been here. Why am I here? Is there somebody else I'm supposed to minister to or touch? You got me and my ambulance out here for some reason. Use me. And as I've said before, most of us take the ambulance that we're supposed to be driving, and we turn it into a camper. Pulled off someplace. Why isn't this nice? It got me a little bed, and, you know, it's just a nice camper. It's not a camper, it's an ambulance. You're left here to minister, to serve, to reach somebody else and let God move in and through your life in whatever location he puts you in.
Richard will be back in a moment to wrap up today's talk. But first, I want to share a couple of thoughts with you. Let's be honest. Real life isn't about living some highlight reel for others to see. Most people have deep hurts, questions, and struggles. Well, we get it, and we want to help you in any way we can. So let's keep this conversation going. You can give us a call anytime at 855-6-RICHARD or connect with us at our website, richardellistalks.com. You can even put in your prayer request right there on the prayer wall. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD or online at richardellistalks.com. And now let's get back to Richard with a final word on today's show.
So where is our church? Our church happens to be gathered in this building today. But you know what? In a few minutes, within a matter of hours, this church will scatter. And you say, well, none of these things, cool things happen to me like happened to you. Well, you know, what's so special about you? The reason it ain't happening to you is because you're not listening, maybe. Start listening. Walk out of here today and say, you know what, God, I'm in. I'm tired of my camper life. I'm ready to be an ambulance. What's up? At lunch, look at your waiter and ask God, is he the one? Just go around asking God, is he the one? Is he the one? Is she the one? Are these kids the purpose? And let him live in and through you and realize that you are housing the God of the universe. Now, your problem may be you're not housing anybody but you. And when it gets right down to it, the biggest location issue for you is, where are you going to spend eternity? In what location are you going to end up? Let me tell you something. You don't end up in heaven without Jesus, and you don't get a life without Jesus, and you don't experience any of these things I'm describing without Jesus. And so at some point in your life, you say, okay, God, I get it. These people talk like they've got purpose and all these coincidences happen to them and you use them, I'm done. My life has no purpose, no meaning. I'm not going anywhere. I'm spending money buying stuff, going places, trying to keep a job, do my best. It's not working. I got no peace, no joy. I want what they've got. How do I get it? And you say, Father, I believe you love me. I understand now that Jesus died for me, was buried, raised from the dead to get me not just eternal life in heaven with you, but an abundant life between here and heaven, and that you want to use my life to impact some other people's lives. I want to understand that more. I want to learn what I need to learn. I want to get equipped for you to be able to use me in people's lives the way I see you using people in my life. And how do I do that? It's a simple prayer away.
You've been listening to Richard Ellis Talks. We really appreciate that you've spent this time with us, but we want to keep the conversation going with you. A couple of ways you can connect with us is by giving us a call anytime at 855-6-RICHARD. That's 855-6-RICHARD. Another way is through our website, richardellistalks.com. You can email us, sign up to get the daily talk sent to your phone each day, right on the prayer wall where we can pray for you, or even stay in touch through our Facebook page at Talk with Richard. We love bringing you the program every day, but it means even more to us when you let us know how the program has helped you. So call 855-6-RICHARD or connect with us at our website, richardellistalks.com. Finally, if you enjoy the program, let us know by your generous support. It would really mean a lot to us. richardellistalks.com. So until next time, have a great day, and thank you for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.